Blog Talk Radio.
Rap. Hey, what's going on? This is the Hard to Guard Radio Show. It's your host, Rick Rivers. Keeping it fun in the sport. I got my man, Jarrett Rudolph. What's going on, Jarrett?
Feeling good, looking good.
No doubt from the real GM giving you that
Jared,
real talk.
How you looking good? I don't see you.
Got
looking
my man
good,
Eddie Burgos, man.
When you look good, you feel good. When you feel good, you play good.
Burgos, what's going on with you, man?
Oh, man, another disappointing Knick loss today. So I'm not feeling it a little bit.
Fasten your seatbelt. You're going to be in for a few more, man. You know what's happening. Kurt Rambis at the controls. His glass is not on tight enough. You already know what's going to happen, man.
Yeah, we lost 14 of the last 16. The playoffs is over. Melo's not too happy. I don't know what's going on.
Hey, today on the show, we're going to have Frank Isola. He's going to chime in a little bit with us about the Knicks. Former New York Knicks, Detroit Pistons, Jerome Williams, a.k.a. the Junkyard Dog, will be on with us last week. Chopped it up with Kenny Anderson and crew. So we're on second week in a row, Ed.
Yeah, feeling good. We're building, man. We're trying to get some more guests, more, you know, quality guests and some stars and people could talk and, you know, talk about what's going on with the Knicks, with the Nets and the NBA, because obviously once April hits, there's going to be no basketball in New York City.
No doubt. No, sure. Hey, Jarrett Rudolph, how you feel, man? Second week in a row on the air with H2G Radio, man. How you feel on the second week, man?
Feeling good, Billy Ray. Looking good, Lewis. I'm just happy that you guys brought me back, man. I love to talk. I love to talk basketball or whatever the sport. So, happy to be back. You know, looking to continue to build on what we did last week. You know, work out the bumps and, make this thing into one of the premier shows out there.
No doubt, man. I love when we talked about the tickets. I just love the part. I know we didn't get to get in too much detail last week with Kenny in his head, but the things that he was sharing with us was exclusive. I started that campaign. I'm not sure if you followed it. Starting the tweets to get Kenny Anderson jersey retired at Georgia Tech. Needs to happen. Definitely needs to happen. I'm not sure why it hasn't happened. You look at him, Stephon Marbury, none of those guys in the rafters. Georgia Tech needs to respond.
Well, I think
Steph is my guy. Like, you know, I would love to see Steph get all the accolades. You know, Steph is a very interesting case, and excuse me, in terms of his basketball career, because how successful he has been in China and the success he enjoyed in the NBA. In terms of what he did at Georgia Tech with that, you know, pipeline of point guards that they had, point guard you at the time, maybe 1 year is not enough for Steph. I mean, they didn't go to the Final Four and do anything like that, but Kenny certainly, you know, put the school on the map, so to speak, and, you know, hopefully the AD and people down there do the right thing by Kenny.
The question is, he only played two seasons there, so does his number really need to be retired? That's my question.
Hey, why not? Kitty, when you go there and you change the entire culture of the school, like who knew about Georgia Tech before Kenny Anderson got there? I mean, Mark Price
was there. Was it Brad Doherty?
You compare Kenny to Mark Price,
absolutely, you do compare Mark Price to Kenny Anderson. Absolutely, no
question. I'm going with Kenny Anderson all day, though. I'm going with Kenny Anderson.
Yeah,
all day.
I figure you do, and I'm going with Steph. But I understand that Mark Price is, you know, you talk about a 5-time NBA All Star. You talk about a great college basketball player, one of the greatest shooters we've ever seen, a guy that hasn't been given the proper credit for, you know, I don't want to say inventing, but perfecting and putting out there in the spotlight the art of splitting the defense on the screen and roll. Mark Price is a bad boy, a bad boy for many years.
Jared, I agree with you. Let's start to talk about Mark Price at the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's focus on Georgia Tech. He was a great player. But who put Georgia Tech in the spotlight more? Was it Kenny Anderson or was it Mark Price during the Georgia Tech years?
I think Kenny Anderson was on a better team with Dennis Scott and what's my man name, Oliver?
Brian Oliver.
So they were on a better team than Mark Price. Than Yeah, he had a better team than Mark Price. You know, I think that Kenny did his thing when he was there. They went to the Final Four. He had to move against Hurley, of course. But to say that, you know, again, the totality that Kenny Anderson over Mark Price, nah, I can't. And, again, I go with Steph, and I know I'm wrong, you know, what Steph did with his 1 year. But I think Mark Price, again, you can't argue with the totality of it. I don't think Kenny Anderson, yeah, I think he had a good year, and he did what was needed to be done. But to say things like put Georgia Tech on the map, I mean, let's not get it twisted. Georgia Tech is not a basketball school. I mean, Jared Jeffries can make the excuse me, not Jared Jeffries. Who was the guy that led them with Coach Hewitt when they made a pretty good run to the I want to say it was the championship game. I mean,
I don't want to make an error in that.
I'm sorry, what?
I said I don't want to make an error on that and guessing. I'm not sure if that's Travis.
Yeah,
best
you know,
time.
But. Now, it wasn't Travis Best. This was maybe 10. Georgia Tech had a really, really deep run in NCAA tournament some time ago. And again, they're not a basketball school. Kenny Anderson wasn't the first part of a powerhouse program that's been on the map for many, many years. He was a premier point guard that played for Bobby Crimmins. When Bobby Crimmins had a knack for going out and getting premier point guards, you know, whether he was the best of, you know, Marbury, Price, Best.
Travis Best.
You know, whether he was the best of the four, you know, it leaves much to be desired. But, you know, I don't want to get too carried away with giving Kenny too much credit for what he did for Georgia Tech in terms of placing them along the elites of other basketball teams. It's just not, you know, it's not the reality of it.
I'm going to give you that, Jazz. But if we talk about premier guards, let's talk about what's happening right now. Let's look at premier guard and Stephen Curry. Has this team to the quickest pace to 55 wins? And really chasing that 72-win record. What do you guys think? It happens or it doesn't happen?
Oh, they won again tonight. So they're 51-5. So they're definitely I think they're going to win 71 games. I think
71?
I think they're going to – it's 73 – sorry, I think they're going to win 73 games. I think they're going to go 73-9.
73-9, you say. What do you say, Jack?
70-12.
Oh, you said they come short. So
it's not about coming short. I think that, you know, they're playing to defend the championship, right? So 70 is the number. You know, you get to 70 and you're only the second team in the history of basketball to win 70 games. I don't think you have to pass the Chicago Bulls in order to go down as one of the greatest teams to ever live. So if they get to 70, I don't think that they push it at that point in the season, you know, give Steph, Clay, and Draymond, give them their rest, and, you know, that's when, you know, you lose, you know, number 10, number 11, number 12, as opposed to, you know, going out and trying to win 73-9, because winning 73-9 and not getting it done doesn't really matter.
You don't think that they want to chase history, though? You don't think that they have this steel chip on their shoulders that they want to identify themselves as one of the in the history of the game?
Going back to back would do that, you know, more so than regular season wins. I think, you know, the championship is the goal for a team that, again, has already won the championship. That, for them, is the big picture. You know, the chip comes from people not giving them their respect and saying, well, if they would have played the Clippers or if they would have played the Spurs or if LeBron and the Cavs would have been healthy, you know, certain things would have gone differently. That's where the chip comes from, okay? The wins come from them just playing excellent basketball. But, again, you know, you need 16 wins in the playoffs in order to get this
yep.
thing done. You know, 73-9 and losing to the Spurs in the conference finals doesn't mean anything, right? You have to finish the job. The job is to win in June. It is not about the regular season. They'll do what they need to do, but I don't think they chase it. I think once you hit 70, you put yourself in elite company. You know, it's only
yep.
one other team there, and you don't need to go and push it out any further.
I got you, Jared. And I want to get a professional on the line. Frank Isola, the New York Daily News, has joined us. I'd like to get your opinion. Frank, how you doing?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Hey, Frank, did Eka ever pay you? Did he ever pay you your debt there from last year when we did the show from 3 years ago? I think he's owed you a few dinners and some beers, right?
He never has. I kind of wish money on the Warriors. I heard you guys talking about them. I just watched them finish off the Miami Heat. I think Thompson and Curry combined for 75 points tonight. Not bad.
Whoa. Yes. So, Frank, when we were just talking about, do we think Golden State gets past the 72 wins, or do they lock in and kind of clinch the top seed and start to rest?
You know what? I always think there's a risk that you take when you do that, because, you know, they're in a rhythm. Now, a guy's going to be playing 30-plus minutes, I doubt that. If they're playing a back-to-back game, maybe they would hold some of their guys out. But I think the way to do it is probably just to play guys very few minutes. You're not practicing that much. I don't think Steph Curry playing 20 minutes in a game is that big of a deal. I don't think they want to go into the playoffs without being in good rhythm and kind of having that continuity. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I think they'll ease up if they get to 70, 71, 72. I don't think guys are going to be playing, 35, 40 minutes a night, but I still think guys will be playing pretty good minutes.
Frank, so I want to get to the Knicks quick. You know, obviously they lost again. Today was a tough loss. They played hard. Actually, their backcourt played well. Melo played terrible. Where do you see this is going?
Well, it's funny. You go right from the Warriors to the Knicks, you're going to depress people pretty quickly. the Carmelo thing is interesting because, I know you know him pretty well, Edgar, and I thought after the game the other night in New York where they lost to Toronto, you don't really see Carmelo like that. I mean, he looked pretty despondent, and I think, it's tough for him because he's 31 years old. He came back from the knee surgery, and we know who all of his buddies are. LeBron is on the best team in the East. Dwayne Wade is probably going to go to the playoffs. Chris Paul is playing for a contending team. And here's Carmelo stuck on the Knicks, who could miss out on the playoffs and probably will for a third straight year. And I think this is getting tough for him. And then tonight, you see the way that he played. And I don't think it's a carryover that he's, he's not trying out there. I just wonder about him physically.
His body language tonight wasn't that good.
It wasn't. But, that also could be that he's not feeling that well. And you know this from being around Patrick Ewing. It's not easy to play well when you're not 100%. And I think, it's tough for these great players because they don't want to go around telling people that they're hurt because then it looks like they're making excuses. And then it's like they're not saying anything. People are like, well, how come you're not playing better? So I think he's probably struggling a little bit with that. But let's face it, we're not even in March yet. I think you might get to the point. 2 weeks from now, if this thing is really falling apart, you might reach a point where you might decide to either really cut back his minutes or have him, skip every other game or maybe just shut him down completely for the year since you're not going anywhere and he is coming back from knee surgery.
Hey, Frank, do you sense that Melo is getting frustrated to where the ship is not sailing the way he'd like, and at the end of the year he may say, you know what, I'm ready to bail?
I think people still might have to convince him to do that. I still think this is a part of Carmelo Anthony that is probably feels that, promises weren't kept and that Phil Jackson was going to do more to turn around this team. So, maybe there's part of Carmelo that's thinking, all right, I'll give it one more summer, or maybe the organization will think, you know what, we're going to bring somebody else in. I just don't understand. You got a guy like Tom Thibodeau out there who, is a proven guy in the league. He's better than what they have now. He knows this market pretty well. He knows Carmelo really well. He's going to be coaching him on the USA basketball team. Carmelo had a good meeting with him a couple of summers ago during free agency. To me, it just makes so much sense. And that's something where I think they can improve the team a lot by hiring a coach like that. Then this summer, I'm not saying you got to go out and get the superstar player, but if they make a couple of moves, I don't think there's any doubt that if Tom were the head coach right now, I really think since the start of the season, I really believe they would definitely be a playoff team. And maybe they would be fighting for, between 45 and 50.
Now, Frank, but, and I agree with you about Thibodeau or even a guy like Mark Jackson, but sticking with Tom, do you think that Carmelo, from a health standpoint, from a leadership standpoint, from a style standpoint, can play and be successful for a coach like Tom?
Yeah, I, in terms of what? What do you mean about playing?
I mean, defensively? Is he a leader? Is he someone that you can put in a position to be more of a facilitator than a volume shooter, volume scorer?
I think that's a fair point. I also think Tom will be a guy that will push Carmelo, and I think Carmelo has tried to buy in a lot more than he has in the past. and you know those around him haven't just been as good. If you go back to the year that they won 54 games, I thought they had a lot of good leaders around Carmelo. I thought they took a lot of pressure off him. And here's the thing about Carmelo. You know, we obviously could talk about things that he doesn't do, but he does something pretty well that there's not a lot of people in the world that could do that. And, you know, I think a guy like Tom would be good for Carmelo. I think he'd love coaching him. He wanted to coach him in Chicago. And I just think that if you made a change like that, I just think that Carmelo will really buy in. And you need, like, Carmelo to kind of have a feeling that there's some light at the end of the tunnel. And right now, I don't think he believes that. I think he wanted to believe it. Maybe he was foolish to believe it a couple of years ago when he took that money, because I think he came back here, A, money that any team can pay. He likes New York. He likes playing at the Garden. His family likes it here. So I think that had a lot to do with it. So maybe he fooled himself into thinking it would get better. But maybe it could get better. I really believe if they hire the right coach, I really think they can, you know, turn it around. I'm not going to say turn around and be a championship contender, but I think being a competent team and definitely a playoff team.
Hey, Frank, we've talked about this before on the show. I mean, we can put the focus on Melo all we want, but the Knicks really don't change the culture in terms of the environment from PR all the way through the faculty. They haven't really made many changes in years now, 15 years or so, when you look about the PR and the staff there. Don't you think they have to make some other changes besides just coaching and personnel changes?
Yeah, you know, I think the person that comes in, and that's why I think Tom is an interesting one, just because he's been there and he kind of knows the lay of the land. I think you bring up a very fair point. And nobody wants to see anybody lose their job, but I do think there kind of comes a point where they need to, you know, figure out, like, you know, who, you know, which guys are the right support staff to put around a team. I got to be honest with you, I think a lot of these teams nowadays, I think they almost have too many people that work for them. So everybody's got like their own workout coach. It's like too many people traveling. Maybe it needs to be pared down a little bit. And I think whatever coach that comes in there, in order to be successful, really has to decide who's going to be the group of people, the support staff that are around the team. You know, that's trainers, equipment guy, assistant coaches, video guy, PR people. Absolutely, all that stuff. Because, you know, Edgar knows this, you know, better than anybody. You know, yep. You need to have people around the team that their number one focus and number one mission is to help the coach to win games, not just worrying about just keeping their own jobs. And I think that's been a big problem over at Madison Square Garden.
Now, since we're talking about that, I could have to ask you a question about Phil Jackson. Obviously, he's being stubborn about the triangle offense. Do you think he actually says, all right, you know what? This is not working? Because when you look at, I look at a guy like Pat Riley. Pat Riley has changed everywhere he's gone. He had run and gun with the Lakers. Then he had ground and pound with the Knicks. Then he went back to the Lakers and had Shaq and Wade and changed the game again. Like, is Phil that confident in the triangle that he's not willing to change?
I think that's a great point you bring up. And, you know, really, like, everybody looks at the Warriors and everyone's like, oh, we got to play that way. Well, the Warriors have that kind of personnel where they can play that way. There's a reason why the Spurs, like, Spurs and the Cavs are toward the bottom in pace, because their way of playing isn't to play like the Warriors, because they don't have that kind of personnel. And I think the problem with Phil Jackson is this idea that this, like, you know, this offense could work, it's going to work. Well, yeah, it worked with Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. It worked, you know, in the 90s, early 2000s, but it is a bit of a different NBA. And a lot of coaches you talk to, the triangle offense, it creates a lot of mid-range jump shots, and you don't really get fouled that often. And if you look at the Knicks, they're a mid-range shooting team that doesn't draw a lot of fouls. And I think that's the toughest part. I mean, it almost seems like when you hear Phil Jackson talk, that it's more about proving to everyone that his offense could work. I don't think Knicks fans care what style you play. They just want to see a team win. And let's be honest, too, guys. We spend so much time talking about offense. The Knicks are terrible defensively. And that's really what, you know, a guy like Thibodeau would bring. You know, you get back to defending a little bit, because that still can win in this league. You have to have the best of both worlds, absolutely. But the Knicks don't do either very well.
Yeah. And the whole situation with Kevin Durant, like, I think Kevin Durant's definitely not coming here, even if Melo talks to him. The Knicks probably will only have $20 million available. I mean, what do you think the chances of him coming here?
I think today's players, let's face it, you know, you look at guys around the league, the guys that are in a lot of commercials, LeBron obviously is in a ton of them. Curry's going to start being in a ton of them. Blake Griffin's in a lot. Chris Paul, they're in L.A. But, you know, Westbrook and Durant are in a lot of commercials. So they live in Oklahoma City. So this idea that you got to be in a big market to kind of seize on all those off-the-court opportunities, that's really not that true. So I think when players are leaving, you know, it's tough to sell the Knicks from this standpoint. Durant's team is going to win 50-plus games this year. Now, you know, when you're looking at the Knicks, they're probably not going to get to 40 wins. They might not even get to 35. Like, how is he going to justify, yeah, I'm putting myself in a better position? Now, people are going to say, well, you'll be with Carmelo, you'll be with Porzingis. Absolutely, but he's already in a pretty good situation now, and he could go to the Warriors. So who would argue that going to the Warriors is not a better situation than New York? You really hurt yourself in terms of free agency when you're not a playoff team. You know, because then you just looked at a lot differently, I think, by these players. And the word that you get, and Adrian Wojnarowski has written about this, that Durant is looking to win a title right now. And if it doesn't happen this season, he's looking to win it next year. So, you know, he's going to go. If he decides to leave for Oklahoma City, I just think he's going to go for a more sure bet. And there are no guarantees, 100%. But you can't tell me that if he went to the Warriors, that's not a better situation for him.
Okay, I just, you know, and it gets back to the culture of the Knicks. And, you know, you just look at, you know, the Patrick Ewing days, and they were always in the mix. And, you know, Jordan stopped a lot of people from winning. But it just looks like, you know, Isaiah and what's my man's name? Layden, Scott Layden. And even now with Phil, there's just not a culture of winning. It's, you know, a revolving door of coaches, a revolving door of players, a revolving door of philosophies. And, you know, I just think that with the Knicks and even a team like the Lakers, where the assumption is that the city and everything that the city offers will attract these guys, it's just a flawed way of thinking. It's really about the culture nowadays. And the Knicks haven't built on anything to where there is no culture. You bring in a player, and like Kevin Durant becomes the culture, or LeBron James will become the culture, and whatever they want to do, that's what you're going to build around. I just think it's the wrong way to build a championship team. I think it's a wrong way to build a legacy for a team or even a culture, because nothing exists. It's all based around one player, and the Knicks have right now nothing to offer any of these players outside of New York City, which is the greatest city in the world, but it's available to them, you know, during the summer and, you know, through various trips. I know that's not a question, but as a New Yorker, it's just really frustrating to see this team.
No,
win
I understand that. And I also think, too, you know, there's a lot, you know, a coach can help establish a culture. And yet, you know, you look at Phil Jackson and, you know, he obviously views himself as the best coach ever in the NBA. And he knows how hard it is. Why would you hire a guy that goes right from playing to becoming a head coach? And then his next guy is going to be Kurt Rambis, who, you know, the last 2 years, his 2 years in Minnesota was 32-132. And I get it. You know, talent obviously has a lot to do with it. But, you know, they weren't a great defensive team. And I think, you know, it's funny, when you talk about the culture, I also think the fans have changed a lot, too. Even when, you know, when Edgar was just talking before, and he's right, like, you know, the Knicks, you know, they played a little bit better tonight. At least they played hard. But even watching, like listening to the broadcasters after the game, it was kind of like the way they were talking about it, it was almost like the Knicks won just because, well, at least they were competitive and they played hard. I mean, was it ever good enough when Pat Riley was the coach that he played hard, or when Jeff Van Gundy was the coach? That was the least we expected from them. We used to get – I remember covering the team when fans would be upset because they didn't think the Knicks played well enough in a win. And we didn't win by enough. And we let these bad teams hang around, and we play to the level of our competition. Now it's like, you know, hey, you know, hey, at least they competed tonight. Really? That's what it's come to?
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Definitely seems sad. Definitely seems sad story. But Melo, I'm sure he'll probably turn it around. Hopefully he keeps it well and healthy for the rest of the season. And I know you do a great job of covering the Knicks and coming and giving us some support here on Hard to Guard Radio.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I hope Carmelo stays healthy, too, because he's a good guy and he's a great player to watch. But they need to put something around him, and they need to get him the coach that can get the most out of him, because he's 31, and boys, like the rest of us, he's not getting any younger.
That's not what the ladies say about you, Frank. That's not what the ladies say about you, Frank.
Good point. It's that It's that wig that I wear. That's what it is.
I heard about that piece.
Hey, Frank, once again, we appreciate you joining us, man, and look forward to catching you up there at the Garden.
Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, Frank. Take care.
Bye.
Hey, that was Frank Isola for New York Daily News. Shortly, we'll be joined by Jerome Williams, former New York Knick. I think this is like a heavy Knick talk right here. Yeah, heavy Knick talk. Yeah, anything to do with my Facebook post today?
Yes, it did. You definitely you roused some people up today.
Definitely roused some people. Jared, if you didn't see it, I was talking about the Knicks. The Knicks got so excited when Phil Jackson joined a couple of years. They thought they were preparing for a parade this year. Somehow. The rug has been pulled from right under.
I think Phil has done a few things well, and I think that, you know, in other areas, you know, he hasn't adjusted. And, you know, from a coach's standpoint, you know, you have Woodson, I think you give him another go. I don't like the Derek Fisher hire. I like the Kurt Rambis replacement even less. You don't have the pieces for the triangle. You have to move away from that. You have to identify your star player's strengths and weaknesses, and you have to surround them with the right type of talent. I think he needs, again, you know, Chauncey Billups, Jason Kidd. You look, it's not a coincidence that Carmelo's enjoyed his best team success when he's played with, you know, guys that are leaders, right? So you need to find that guy out there. You need to find that leader, someone that lets Carmelo play the point man role, and they go out there and they're the people that are leading. But, you know, at the same time, to say that there haven't been moments throughout this thing, I mean, look, before this slide that the Knicks were on now, you know, they were in contention for a playoff spot. And, you know, and again, Phil comes into a situation like this, and it's really a win-win for him. I mean, if you succeed, you've done what the people before you haven't been able to do. If you fail, you just fall into line with everyone else that have tried to right the ship and hasn't been able to do it. But I'm not going to come down too hard on him because my expectations for Phil weren't that high to begin with. It just, again, it's a lack thereof culture and always having someone come and put their fingerprints on it. If Phil leaves, it's going to be the same thing with someone else that comes in and now trying to create a basketball team based around their basketball ideology. I mean, I just hope that it's not an analytics guy that comes in here and softens up the city. But
hey, Jack, here's what I say, Jack. If they're going to hire personality, if they're going to hire former players, why not go to a great personality and a great former player on the line with H2G Radio right now? My man, the Junkyard Dog. Where you at, Junkyard?
What's going on, fellas?
My man, the JYD. Hey, JYD,
yes,
take the sidelines, baby. Take the sidelines.
Come on, man. For the right price, you know the Dog Pound will bring the heat to New York City.
Hey,
not like they can't afford it.
I love the Dog Pound. Hey, remember we were out there at the NBA, the players' party. The JYD, the Junkyard Dog, posted up right next to us, and I couldn't do any interviews no more. I was court watching him.
Yeah.
Come on, man. You're supposed to get it out,
man. I was
court
watching the JYD. The JYD was out there representing for the basketball, I believe it was the Basketball Network, had it popping on the red carpet.
Yes, he did.
We were representing. We were having a good time out there. That was a good All-Star weekend, too.
Hey, Jerome, tell the fans a little bit, what are you doing right now?
Oh, man, just doing a little TV, you know, building my own network, Champions Basketball Network, you know, we covering everything, doing original content and providing a place for players to produce their own shows and have a platform. So, you know, just up and coming. You can download the Champions Basketball Network app for your Apple or your Android right on Google or the Apple Store. And you can see what we got going on. We got live games from high school. We got original content, Trash Talking with Legends. Also, Eddie Johnson's What's on My Mind. So, got different players producing shows and different things. So, you know, we feel like this is the next phase in the millennium with players who are taking control of their brands. You know, want to produce their own content and put it out there for their fans.
JYD, I was going to say, in between all what you're doing, are you getting the opportunity to kind of glance and follow the NBA games, or you staying in touch, or is college to focus? Where's your eyes at now with this basketball stuff?
Oh man, I'm a NBA fan first. I always keep in touch with what's going on, especially all my former teams. You know, always watching the teams out there in the NBA and what they're doing, because that's some of my you know, my main passion. I also look at college basketball and who's next and up and coming, and you know, can't forget some about these high school phenoms that are out here, and you know, will be the next phase of players coming into the NBA.
So how are we going to fix these Knicks?
Yep, exactly what I'm going at. Well, you know, the Knicks, you know, obviously, you know, I think the bright spot this year is Porzingis. I think he's got a lot of tremendous upside. I mean, I think this kid in 5 years is going to be a perennial all-star and the next Dirk Nowitzki. I mean, what he's been able to show in his rookie season has been phenomenal. From a player standpoint, and from a you know, a franchise player standpoint, I think the Knicks in general, you know, with all the coaching changes and everything else, you know, now is a situation where they're, you know, they're caught in a 22, because you have, you know, older veteran like Carmelo Anthony, who's trying to win, and that takes a lot of free agents. You know, that takes some big-time players to make the playoffs, to do these kinds of things. I think, you know, the offseason was a positive one for the Knicks in terms of some of the free agents they were able to land, such as Aaron Afalo and Lopez. But I think that, you know, they're gonna need a little bit more in order to get over the hump that they're at right now.
Jerome, tell us from a professional standpoint, what it's like playing for a team that you know is not going to the playoffs, and how do you, you know, maintain a professional approach to the games and to practice? You know, how do you maintain the locker room and stay positive when, you know, despite your best efforts, it's just not going the way that you've envisioned it going? Like, fill us in a little bit on what might be going on in the Knicks locker room.
Well, you know, the main thing is, you know, really the veterans are the ones who kind of can take control. But, you know, if you're frustrated with the situation, it's almost like a double-edged sword because you can't even dig yourself out of the hole. The main thing is, you know, you have to take the positives and look at where the team is and what you can gain each night out. Every game, you want to stay in the game. And when I say stay in, I mean stay in between that 5 to 10 point range all the way up until the last 5 minutes of the game. If you can do that on every night that you go out there and play, that the first three quarters to the end of the fourth, the beginning of that last fourth quarter is all about effort. You know, effort in the NBA can get you far, and especially if you're able to learn and grow and play smart, make the right decision, the right choices on the offensive end as well as defensive end, and stay to the game plan. Those are the kind of things as a veteran player that you need to push in the locker room, and the things that are going to take to make those steps. So even if you lose a game, you know, because we know in the fourth quarter, veterans take over on good teams. So if you can't stop those veterans on good teams in the last 5 minutes, you got to at least be able to push through and hang with them, because they're not turning it on until the last 5 minutes. So your goal should be every game to either be tied or, you know, at least trying to lead going into that last 5 minutes to give yourself a chance to the win. But if not, you should, you know, that should be your goal. You should never get into games where you're down 20, where you're down, you know, 15 in the first three quarters, because now you're trying to overcome a mountain and they haven't even turned it on yet. And that's where the problems lie. When you see games like that, that's where I'm shaking my head, because in the NBA, any team can compete on any given night. It's just it takes discipline, takes hard-nosed effort, and it takes the team being as one. When I say team being as one, I mean the guys in that locker room. So there's my take.
So if I want, I'll put your GM hat on. What would you do to fix the Knicks for next season and beyond? Because obviously they need a point guard, you know, they need some things. Like, what would you do to try to help Melo succeed if he's still with the team, or do you think that Melo should leave the team?
Well, obviously, you know, Melo's heart's in New York. I mean, that's where he wants to be. That's where he's been trying to aim to bring a championship. And, you know, he needs some pieces. He needs some help. I think that, you know, the draft pick is a start. I think, you know, some of the free agents that signed were a start, but obviously, you know, you need a 1-2 punch and 1-2-3 punch to be in championship contention. Right now, they're looking at a one punch. And, you know, on most nights, you know, when teams are able to key in on that one punch, they're going to make his shot selection very difficult, as you can see with the poor shooting percentage the last few games. That's the kind of thing that, you know, when you have another guy out there that has the same capabilities in another position that can take a lot of that heat off. I mean, you know, when you look take a step back and you see some of the strong teams that are in contention right now, whether you're looking at San Antonio Spurs, Golden State, Cleveland, I mean, everybody has at least three players, those teams at least. And then their supporting cast is a very strong bench, as well as players who are playing alongside those guys. So when you look at that and you look at that structure and you say, well, who else is out there that's competing? Well, your next name that comes up is OKC with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, who are two juggernauts to guard. You can't guard those guys one-on-one, so they're able to carry their team. And then from there on, you know, you're looking at teams like, you know, Toronto that have brought in, you know, a number of free agents and have kind of built and had those guys together, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, for, you know, almost 7 years. So that team chemistry and that bond is there, where guys know where they're going to be and what they're going to do. So when you say, what are the Knicks missing? They're missing a whole lot of things that aren't very hard to – I mean, that are very hard to do in one summer. Those kind of things you just can't build overnight. You can't pick up free agents overnight either.
Yeah, so, JYD, I mean, let me ask you this, though, because your career, you was the blue-collar guy. You did all the intangibles. You did all the things that help teams win that always show up on a stat sheet. So when you look at the NBA, sometimes it's star quality, a lot of stardom. Tell me your five guys, man. Your five guys, you think that really roll up, that really brings the dog out every night. They bring that dog out. They barking. Who would you give your five guys? If you got to grow with five, who's your five dogs that make it happen out there?
In the NBA. Man. That make it happen right
that
now.
That got that bark like JYD had when he was out there.
Well, you know what I'm saying? Kawhi Leonard, that's one of the dudes right now that I really love watching play, because he's the only person that I see consistently on a consistent basis as LeBron James passing the ball. Meaning passing it like, I'm not getting ready to take this dude because he's too low to the ground. He's in his defensive stance. His wingspan is crazy. And he's playing hard. And so that would be one of my picks. Another dog.
Yeah,
I'm
going to let it ball for him.
Yeah, another dog I love and watch. And this dude right here, you know, he might be playing with some of the best shooters in the game, but he's doing some dirty work out there. That's Draymond Green. Draymond just gets after it. You know what I mean? Triple-double extraordinaire. You know, really gives you that smush mouth when he wants to. You know,
yes,
ain't scared of nobody. And he's guarding
like
all five positions. Absolutely. You know, those are kind of players. I like the guys that get down like that. You know, one just a rough and rumble guy. You know, kind of got tossed to the side from Charlotte. You know, Bismack Biyombo. You know, I love the way he gets on that glass and blocks shots. You know, just plays his role.
Ooh,
you know, and got a team at the second spot in the East. You know, I love that.
And they don't talk about him that much.
Nah, they ain't going to get a lot of talk. Another cat I love, you know, he got his check this summer, but I taught him well because I coached him in high school, Tristan Thompson. That lunch pail's coming every night. That double-double's coming every night.
You ain't got to think
about it.
Got to love those type of guys.
Got to love those type of guys, man. That's it.
Yes, indeed. Hey, and next week starts March, man. So you know, when we get to March, we move from NBA. The focus becomes NCAA. March Madness. Are you peeping at your Georgetown guys? You looking at them?
I'm sure you are. Man, I'm peeping. I'm always peeping, man. I'm always checking out things that's going on, man. And right now, Xavier, they making some noise, man. They got some pros on that team. They got some pros on that team, man. People aren't even paying attention.
but they got a young cat that looks like a young Jamal Crawford out there crossing people up and doing his thing. So I'm just like, yo, that team right there is a problem. They're going to see some problems come tournament time. Obviously, you know, I like the young Ben Simmons and some of the other players out there that's doing some things. But, you know, I'm going to get my real eyes out. I'm starting to really watch right now to see who got that beach with him.
You brought up Ben Simmons, and it segues to another part that I want to talk with you. What are your thoughts from Ben Simmons? I'm not sure if you've seen him while you were at Finley Prep and playing against Montverde.
Absolutely. Coached against him.
I'm sure you guys matched up. Talk to me about Ben Simmons and Montverde and playing against him to what you see now at LSU.
Well, you know, he's always been, you know, a type of player that can rebound that ball and push it out there and really get it out on the break and make the proper pass. Obviously, right now, you know, in college is a different game. So from a pro standpoint, my question is, what's going to be his offensive sets? You know, what's he going to be able to do offensively? Because he has all the intangibles from rebounding, you know, to attacking the rim and being able to pass. So those things are cool. But, you know, when I look at pro players, I'm looking at guys like Buddy Hield. I mean, just straight killing them. Not getting a lot of fanfare, but daggone it, he's hitting 40-point games. When the fourth quarter comes, it's like, give me the ball. I got to move. I'm going to put it on him. Blah, 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 blah. Fade away. Buckets. That's a pro right there. So I don't know who's running in the top five, but they didn't have him in the top five. And I think somebody's skipping a beat and hope he can land on the Knicks. Because I'm just telling you.
we don't have no draft picks.
Daggone it. Trade somebody. Trade somebody and get one.
Hey, you know how these guys lose their value? The longer they stay in college, it seems like they lose value along the way, and people start to find things wrong with them rather than watching their commitment to their college.
It must be all those analytic guys. Must be some of them analytic guys. Don't know what the heart of a player is. So show me the dude that wants the ball at the end of the quarter, and I can tell you whether or not he's a pro.
Yeah, and I know you keep your eyes on the high school stuff too, man. So I kind of know you sat on that sideline with Finley Prep 1 year. You were at the league, and I'm not exactly sure what court created your transition, and if this is a proper forum to kind of discuss it.
Well, man, you know, one of the crazy cats is there's a couple of them. First, you got Josh over there in Detroit. He's you know, by far one of the top players in the country, and then you got Aiden. Aiden out there in California, 7-footer, shoot the three, athletic. Watched him play this year, crazy, just crazy. Took off, right inside the foul line off 2 feet and dunked on a whole team of high schoolers. It was ridiculous. Yeah, he was going to come to Finley Prep if I was still the coach. That's why they had to let me go. Had too many pros coming in.
Was the reason?
We won't get onto it on air.
Okay. That's why I want to say
in high school basketball, you know, there's a lot of politics, and you know, you just can't have, you know, whenever you have five McDonald's All American nominees on one team, you know, that's not good for business.
and you guys know, Finley Prep is always widely regarded as the best team in Nevada. I think they go up against the school name. I think it's Gorman or what's the team that's like your
Bishop
rivalry
Gorman.
In Nevada?
Yeah, Bishop Gorman.
Yeah, they're always a big rivalry right there in the state of Nevada, man. So I'm not sure who won it this year, but that's always a big time matchup.
Yeah, I was one of the only coaches in history to make it to the Final Four and have five McDonald All-American nominees as a rookie coach. So if that tells you anything, that's a problem for business.
So I got one question. In your last, do you think you're going to, one, either get back into coaching in high school? Probably not. Or do you want to be like, you one guy that I always see maybe as a GM one day in the NBA. Because you walk around, you talk to everybody, you know, you're smart. Is that something down the road you want to do?
Absolutely, you know, absolutely. I just want to, you know, get in the right situation. I've been offered a few, you know, jobs in the NBA up until this point, and I've always looked at it like, you know, hey, you just got to wait on the right situation, whether that's college, whether that's pro. Obviously, the Finley Prep situation was the right situation. It was, you know, I'm working with the top athletes. You know, I got right now, I got about 7 players that coached under me and played under me that are in the pros right now. So we're working on right now $250 million in contracts. So that just, you know, that's just out of high school. So,
hey man, that's great. That's great stuff. Hey, Junkyard Dog, man, we always appreciate you coming in. Always good to run into you because Junkyard Dog gonna give you that energy, gonna give you that bark.
Absolutely, man. That's how we do it. You know, always giving up to my fans out there in New York, the boroughs, keeping it real. Really appreciate you guys for having me on the show.
Thank you,
appreciate you, Jerome. Hey, that was Jerome Williams, the Junkyard Dog, former New York Knicks, Detroit Pistons, NBA guy. Love to have him, NBA personality. Hey, man, there's like a few more minutes. That's our time right now.
One question I do want to ask, because I know both you guys, Jared just got into coaching this year, and Rick, you've been in high school and junior high school coaching for a very long time. And something, you know, me, I don't really touch it that much, but I want to ask you about the politics, the high school politics that goes on in one, and specifically in New York City, that you have to deal with.
Hey, you know what? Like Junkyard alluded to, there's politics. I'm sure there's in every region, every place, there's politics that go with the game. Here in New York City, I think what you're going to find is there are a lot of folks who are not as always supportive of each other as we should be. I think that's something that people you'll find consistent here in New York, that everybody seems to want to be so competitive with each other that we don't always work well with each other. And there's some times where it's just the politics in terms of, hey, you know what, you look at the Catholic school organization, they have a certain way that they do things, and you got to fit into the system of how they do things, and public school organization have the same kind of setup. So you got to figure out what the politics are, how to get along with folks, who not to trip over, and I think that's the same in any region, any space. You got to learn who's actually at the top of the game, just like Jared was alluding to when we talked about some other things regarding management. You want to make sure that you don't trip on any landmines.
So, Jared, what's some of the things that you've confronted coaching, you know, the young kids so far this season?
Well, yeah, I think I've lived a bit of a charmed existence when it's come to it. Look, we're 13-1. Bad official. Like every time we play in New Haven, we get a, you know, bad official, you know, clock malfunction. And, you know, so you run into, you know, the cheating. I think the overwhelming concern for me is the lack of skills and fundamental development that these kids have. They don't know how to play basketball, right? So you get them running up and down the court, and, you know, you get the city game. You know, you get kids that got a good handle on the ball, you know, fairly athletic, but they play the game the wrong way. A lot of, you know, and one mixtape crap, you know, running to the three-point line when you don't have a three-point shot. And I've coached my boys on how to play basketball, how to set a screen, how to roll off a screen, how to pop over a screen. You know, we have multiple different looks that we do defensively. And that's why we win, because we play basketball, and a lot of people don't know how to play basketball. In terms of the politics, I mean, look, it is what it is. It's simple stuff that, again, is not about the kids as much as it's about the coaches and coaches' egos and making a process more difficult and counterproductive than it needs to be. But it's always been that way. You just try to do your best for the kids, and you try to find the right opportunities for the kids and then give them a platform to perform and show, you know, themselves and their fans and their parents, you know, how much their hard work is paying off. I mean, that's what I try to do. I always try to keep it about the kids and never make it about the foolery that goes on around it.
So I got a good question for Rick. This is for Rick, though.
Yeah.
Mark Jackson, yeah, about a month ago, said something about that Stephen Curry has made, you know, what he's doing in the league is bad for the younger kids. Do you agree with that, or how do you fix that?
You know what? I think Mark's response got taken out of context. I think what he was trying to get across is that Stephen Curry, people have become so overwhelmed by how his play that kids are now becoming so overwhelmed with shooting a three-pointer. I think what Mark was trying to allude to is that Stephen Curry has practiced and he's prepared himself for those moments, and he trains and he prepares. You just can't go into a pickup game and yell, "I'm Steph Curry," and just start shooting 30-footers. And actually, I've seen that not just with kids. I've seen that with adults. I was actually refereeing a game the other night, and these adults are running to the three-point line and avoiding layups. So I believe the three-point – Stephen Curry has kind of engaged folks and kind of touched folks in that they can – you don't have to now soar like an eagle through the air and dunk like Michael Jordan, that the three-point line has become the new dunk. And people are feeling like, I can do that. I don't have the athletic ability to dunk, but I can shoot a three, and everybody's trying to get behind the three-point line and chuck up shots. So I think to Mark Jackson's point, he was basically trying to tell kids, that, listen, do not become so overwhelmed with a three-pointer. Work on your mid-range shot, things that Jarrett was alluding to. Work on the fundamental part of basketball and not kind of have your game pattern behind Stephen Curry and just shooting threes. Although it's a great, you know, it's a great point, but I think the threes have becoming a lot more a part of basketball, and I think it's becoming much more of a focus than it was in the past.
So how do you guys fix? How do you coach your kids now? Like, you know, Jared or Rick, how do you?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to first to a man or to a woman that puts himself in a position to now coach or teach. You have to know something about the game, right? You know, I study, and again, I coach junior high, and I study a lot. You know, I study a lot of basketball and things to do better and things to do different. And, you know, it's really about teaching and identify. Don't do a whole lot of yelling. Kids don't, you know, typically respond to that. You know, you want to create an environment. You want to invest in the kids. But the problem, and especially in New York City, okay, which I believe still per capita has the best basketball players in the world. You know, we're not talking about, you know, professionals. Just, you know, you won't find a better pickup basketball or, you know, better raw skill than any place in New York City with respect to Chicago and all these other places that are producing. But the city game has now really, really, really been hurt by, again, the foolery that goes on around the game. And it's no longer about teaching and instructing and playing. It's like with respect to Sebastian Telfair, when he was out there doing his thing and, you know, he was the next great one to come out, and people, you know, would talk about whether he was better than Marbury. And now that's almost a joke. He's not anywhere near Steph. Like, you guys, like,
Jared,
Steph could have went.
How do you say that's a New York thing, though? I mean, how is the
I was getting there. If you let me get there,
yeah.
I'll explain.
Yeah, okay.
So now what goes on is stuff on the outside. You know, you look at Marbury and Felipe Lopez, so many from that particular era, and how they understood from grade school how to play the game the right way. How to identify, how to come off the screen, how to dribble, not to dance with the ball, how to attack the rim, how to shoot a free throw, how to defend.
Are doing that now?
They're not doing
what
it. Okay, it's so much about who's coaching the team and everything else, and getting them in the stupid AAU tournaments that ain't about nothing, and they ain't playing against anybody, and everybody's grouping up, and it's more about athleticism and playing with the ball and doing all this other crap than it is about basketball.
Jared, where are the college scouts at? Are the college scouts in your high school gym, or are they in these AAU circuits where there are 300 to 400 kids in the gym at one time?
College basketball coaches will come to where the talent is. Okay, so
and
the talent is in AAU, they will come,
circuit.
But they're not going to neglect, they're not going to turn a blind eye to what's going on in high school. If you have a ball player that's playing, a lot of these AAU kids, they flame out. They're good in AAU, and then when you get to college, you never hear from them again. Why? Because they run up against some kids that you ain't never heard from that weren't coddled in these AAU programs, and they're killing them with fundamentals. fundamental basketball, how to shoot, how to play a role, how to play a role and thrive in that role over 4 years. Meanwhile, in the city game, you get five uncles and aunts and nieces and friends and everyone else telling you how damn good you are, forcing you to an AAU program where they benefit. You get to the next level where people aren't going to coddle you, and then you're getting destroyed, and then what happens after that, okay? The AAU program in the city game has been so corrupted by the stuff that goes on around that it's no longer about teaching basketball. New York is at the – when's the last time we had a great, great, great New York City point guard come out and go take the world by storm? It used to be an annual thing. It hasn't been a great point guard maybe since Telfair. It's not going to change anytime soon.
No,
it's not going to change anytime soon.
The game has changed.
Oh, come on. With New York City, we changed
the game.
Listen,
no,
there's nothing going on with the game changing that you can't teach a kid how to do.
I'm not sure if you're in these gyms. The game has changed. Before,
no, the game ain't changed that much. The game is still
basketball. Let Rick talk.
I've spoke on this many of times. Before, the game at that time during those guys, Felipe, Stephon, was an outdoor playground game. And the goal and everybody, what they did was they dribble, and everything was about a fancy dribble and that's what characterized New York City point guards. Now the game is played in top gyms. The game is played on the circuit. The game is played as a more of a team sport. It's not too much more of the playground basketball, and people are not in the playgrounds wanting to see the shake and bake move much anymore like we had before in New York. So the game has just evolved. And New York City guards that you've seen with the Kenny Anderson's and the Flair and the shake and bake, that's not idolized anymore. What's idolized?
You know the crazy thing you say that about Steph. And I remember it was an article, and I forgot who wrote or what I saw about Steph all these years ago. And it was eighth grader on the planet. And when I saw that article, I'm like, how is he the best eighth grader on the planet? I'm the best eighth grader on the planet, and I'd gear myself up to play against Marbury. And just for years, building myself up. When I get my shot at this guy, I'm going to destroy him. I'm going to show him I'm the best. And I expected him to come out and handle the ball like Sham and all these different dudes. And when I saw Steph, I knew at that point he was a professional. Okay? He didn't play with the ball. He passed the ball well. He shot the ball well. So to sit here and say that Steph was just a play – no, Steph could play on the playground because he was so polished. He was so great. Like all of his other brothers that came along, because he was from a great line of basketball where all those Marburys could play. Okay? But the point is this. Okay, whether it's Felipe being the scoring machine that he was, or was Marbury being the professional point guard that he was, or Ron Artest being the professional that he was, it's all basketball. It's still basketball. Okay, there's a place for a guy that knows how to play the ball fundamentally sound. Okay, there's a place for a guy that can rebound and make a decent outlet pass. There's a place for a guy that can defend. It's still basketball. It's still basketball. In New York City, we haven't developed them correctly the right way. In New Haven, Connecticut, they're not developing them the right way. In Providence, Rhode Island, all over. Just the East Coast in general. And you look at what everyone else around the nation is doing. And, yeah, they go through the crappy AAU system. But, again, we're not producing them because we're not teaching them how to play basketball. When they get to a level and they're playing against people that do know how to play basketball, they're lost in the shuffle. And then what do? You blame the system.
Hold on,
so
but I got a question
for Rick. Where are the players coming from?
Hold on, but
so
Rick,
where
I got a
question.
Right now, they're coming from the Midwest. The Midwest and the South.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Rick deals with a lot of these high school kids. Do you feel like a lot of today, these high school kids are coddled? Like they're getting taken care of, like they're baby, thinking that they're good, but they're not really that good. Like, what do you think is the problem?
Yeah, no question.
Hold on.
I don't think they're just not that good. Here's what I see from being in it. Our kids are marketed to very heavy. They are given everything because they are marketed to heavy. Right now, Nike, Adidas, Under Armour are saturating our kids with product and marketing events to promote them and to sell shoes. Our kids are so used to getting something instantly and being instantly gratified that they don't work for it. So that work ethic has been lost. And I'm in the movement, so I know from young kids all the way up to high school kids. The problem is these guys have been overly marketed to and been saturated with marketing things that they get things instantly. Here in New York, we've gone to a point just on social media and just on technology that our kids are far too distracted. Everything happens instantly. They can become instant famous. And the moment they put a videotape out, a highlight of their game which only shows their strengths, automatically they got 1,000 followers, and instantly they feel like they've made it because that's the era that we live in. So right now, the coach that really wants to get through to them, to strengthen them, they have blocked it out because they got 1,000 people telling them that they're great. And there's one coach that's telling me I need to work on this and that. I'm blocking him out because I can find another coach that wants to grab me because they want to tap into my 1,000 followers. And they know if I get 2,000 followers, a shoe deal might come right behind me. So
where do we disagree with what you're saying, all this, brother? You're saying the same thing I've been saying. It's not about the game.
No.
It's about everything else and not the game.
I think we are saying something different because what you said is our East Coast kids are not good and they're not being recruited.
They're not as good. Listen, the Midwest and the South are killing us. Midwest and the South are killing us. And even the West, they're killing us.
We got 30 seconds, fellas.
They're absolutely killing us. Midwest, South, and the West are killing us. The city, especially in New York City, hasn't been so. I've never seen New York City so bad. We used to have 4 or 5 a year going out there. It's nothing now. It's nothing. They're killing us out there. They're killing us out west. They're killing us in the Midwest. They're killing us in the South.
In closing, Jack, I will agree with you. Right now, the pipeline of kids are coming from different areas. Midwest Chicago is really leading the way in terms of
even Jersey is outshining
in
New York City.
It's very difficult to compare city to a state. So I think we got to be careful with New York City. Although it's very populated, it is more than the state of Texas and the state of California. Got to go. H2G Radio. Great energy to close out the show. We see you guys next week.
Later.